Tony Khan promised a gift for Sting. On tonight's show, Sting announced last week that he would be retiring at AEW Revolution in 2024, and Tony Khan was going to have a special gift for him, and a lot of guesses as to what that gift might be, but the gift turned out to be Ric Flair. Can we return this gift if we have the receipt? Will they allow us to return the gift at the store if we present the receipt to the cashier? There he was, in the middle of the ring, paying homage to Sting, saying some nice words about him. Tony Khan had a gift for all of us, though, and that was the gift of Okada. It was very casually announced last week that Kazuchika Okada from New Japan Pro Wrestling would be wrestling on Dynamite tonight in a tag team match with Orange Cassidy against Bryan Danielson and Claudio Castagnoli. So the first time that Okada and Danielson have been in the ring together since Forbidden Door, when Okada broke Danielson's arm. It was very casually thrown out there last week. And that turned out to be the highlight of the night because we had a very good, very fun main event that gave us a little preview of what is to come at Wrestle Kingdom, because I still believe the match at Wrestle Kingdom will be the rematch between Bryan Danielson and Okada. And I thought what they did tonight was perfect, because we got Okada and Danielson a little bit in the ring, but they didn't give too much away, right? You want to save that for the eventual rematch. So we got a small preview of what is to come in the eventual rematch between these two men. But we also had Claudio in there for the first time with Okada, which is something I was looking forward to just as much as seeing Danielson and Okada back in the ring, was seeing Claudio in the ring with Okada. And Claudio picks up the win for his team, pinning Orange Cassidy, which has now earned him a match next week on Dynamite for the AEW International Championship. They did an angle post-match that a lot of people are assuming and thinking was real, and I know what they were doing. They were basically planting the seeds for the eventual rematch between Danielson and Okada, and Danielson was selling a face injury, and I'm sure that's all it was. But it came off very awkwardly, and it kind of killed the crowd, because I don't think the crowd really knew what they were doing. I think the crowd thought he might seriously be hurt, and he wasn't, but that's kind of how they took it. And you had all these people out there, because the Blackpool Combat Club members were out there, the Best Friends members were out there, Hook was out there, he was jaw-jacking back and forth with Wheeler Yuta. And it was almost like you were waiting for something to happen, and you can see Okada, and he was sort of taunting Danielson. He was rubbing his face like, oh, does it hurt? Does it hurt? So, and that's how they went off the air. So yeah, it was a little bit of an awkward ending to the show, a little bit chaotic there at the end. But I loved everything about that main event. And speaking of main events, this was a very newsworthy episode of Dynamite. I really liked tonight's show, except for maybe a couple things. But I enjoyed tonight's show, and it was a newsworthy show for a few reasons. And one of the reasons this show was newsworthy is for the announcement that on Collision this Saturday, they are going to be in Connecticut. We have a huge main event. Now, if you listen to the sound off on Sunday, I talked about this possibility that they were probably going to make the announcement on Dynamite this week, that we were going to get an MJF-Kenny Omega match for the AEW World Championship on Collision. Right? I just talked about this on Sunday, and sure enough, we got the announcement tonight that it will be MJF defending his title against Kenny Omega. The biggest main event in Collision history is coming up this Saturday. And they had to do it. They had to do it this weekend because the whole point, the whole story, is that MJF is days away from breaking Kenny Omega's record as the longest reigning AEW world champion of all time. They couldn't wait any longer. If they were going to play off of that, they had to do the match on Collision. And we're going to do it on Rampage. So we're getting that match. Huge main event coming up on Collision this Saturday. And look, you know, for a show that they're trying to, I'm sure, boost the numbers, and they want to keep Collision relevant as a top show for them. People should tune in, must see. That's a must see main event. If you're a big AEW fan, MJF against Kenny Omega for the first time ever is a big time main event. We had a lot of big names on the show tonight, if you think about it. We had Sting. We had Ric Flair make an appearance. We had Adam Copeland on the show tonight. We had, who else did we have? We had Danielson. We had Okada. Right? We had RVD made another cameo appearance on the show tonight. We had Omega. We had MJF. So, a lot of big names. A lot of star power on the show tonight. We also had a home invasion angle where Swerve Strickland dropped by Hangman Page's home to visit his family, throw a little more fuel on the fire in the feud between those two. So we saw Swerve make it personal tonight, heading into their eventual rematch. And we had one of the blemishes on the show, which was for the AEW Women's World Championship. We had Hikaru Shida defending her title against Ruby Soho. And I don't know if... Actually, I do know. I take that back. It just wasn't a very good match. But I think it's made worse by the fact that I just sat here and watched last night a really good Halloween Havoc. Night one of NXT Halloween Havoc. And there was something that struck me about that Halloween Havoc show and anybody who watched it, which is that half the show was occupied by the ladies. They had five women's matches on the NXT show last night. And nearly every single one of them, except for the main event, which had Becky Lynch in it, nearly every single one of them, it was a combination of developmental talents. And all but one were tremendous, I thought. I thought they were very good last night, and it was certainly better than what we got on this show, the one women's match here for the championship that we got on this show tonight. I don't know what happened in this match. The crowd didn't give a shit about it either. The crowd was completely dead for this match. They just could not get into what these two ladies were trying to do. I've seen Hikaru Shida and Ruby Soho in the ring together. In fact, I think they had a match on Rampage last month that was very good, as I recall. So I don't know what happened tonight, but this match was a miss. It was a fail. Nobody seemed to care about it. And it had an absolute, just dumb shit spot in this match that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. And whoever came up with the idea to do that spot in this match should be reassigned to other duties within the company. We'll talk about that spot. We'll talk about that match, which unfortunately I didn't like at all. It was the weak point of the show. But I did say it was a newsworthy show. We had the announcement tonight of a brand new AEW pay-per-view. We have two pay-per-views left this year. Full Gear will not be the last show. Saturday, December 30th, live on pay-per-view, AEW will present World's End from the Nassau Coliseum here in New York. Not in the city, but it's going to be out on Long Island at the Nassau Coliseum. And so that was rumored that there might be a pay-per-view the day before New Year's Eve. And we know that AEW is adding more pay-per-views heading into 2024. They may end up with one pay-per-view every single month. But this is their newest addition to the pay-per-view roster coming up on December 30th. But we'll talk about all of it because this is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, October 25th, 2023. I am the Solemn Monster. Yes, a few minutes late, despite all of the protesting by certain individuals in the chat who apparently have a hot date that they have to catch at the end of tonight's stream. They're basically sitting there going, hey, what's going on here? Right, Solemn Monster, come on, let's go. Get the party on the road here. Here's my piece of advice to those people who are they're in such a rush and they're seriously bothered. Go find another stream. There's tons of other reviews out there. If it bothers you that much, I'm sure you will find the one that you love, and they will keep you updated with what's going on Dynamite. But everybody else, we got a good review plan for tonight. So like and subscribe. If you would hit that like button, I would appreciate it. We're shooting for 400 likes here if we are to do our Be the Booker segment a little bit later on. Let's see if we can get there. Super chats are open. Channel memberships are open as well if you would like to become a channel member. If you like my content, you appreciate what I do. I do appreciate all of the support. So again, any super chats, we'll go through them. Any questions you have, fire them on off to me. And we will go through that a little bit later on. But let's start here from the top with this Dynamite show, because the show opened up with Renee in the back, and she was there to interview the AEW World Heavyweight Champion, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, who said that he had to make a super quick phone call before we went any further, and he dialed up his former, for now, tag team partner, the injured Adam Cole, who had his surgery, by the way. Best wishes to Adam Cole, who has said this is the most painful and frustrating injury that he has ever had to deal with in his career. And that is coming off a year, by the way. where he described his concussion last year, Forbidden Door, as the most serious and frustrating injury of his career. So for him to say that tells you how bad it really is. But he dialed up Adam Cole, put him on speakerphone. Cole said that he was happy to get out of that psycho's house, referring to Roderick Strong. Jacob Donnelly, thank you for the $15. Hey, Jacob, I hope you're doing well, man. I hope you're doing well. I appreciate that. I don't appreciate nice hole, but I do appreciate that. So, Roderick Strong, right? Almost as soon as Adam Cole makes reference to him, Roddy shows up, and he gets wheeled in by Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. MJF ends the call at that point. Strong said that MJF is obviously the man behind the devil mask. Of course, means he isn't. But in a world where we pretend that he isn't, he said that he would be willing to help him with Bullet Club Gold because of their mutual friendship with Adam Cole. MJF wasn't interested in this, and he shoved Roddy's wheelchair backwards out of camera frame, and then he cut a very heated promo on Juice Robinson, his opponent on the show tonight, said that he's got a bullet with his name on it, and live in Philly, he will not miss. At which point they cut to a shot elsewhere of someone in the devil mask looking into the camera, moving their head around. And of course, then they cut the camera feed. So the mystery continues as far as who the masked man is. But that led into our opening match of the evening here for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. MJF, who has won the Diamond Ring from day one, the only winner of that Diamond Ring, the only person to hold that ring has been MJF. And so he was defending his ring tonight against Juice Robinson, who won that battle royal on TV last week. MJF immediately went on the offensive, took Robinson to ringside. He sat him on a chair next to the barricade, and then he booted Juice, sent him over the barricade. Back at ringside, MJF catapulted him face first into the ring post, and Robinson came up busted open and bleeding from the forehead. MJF shouted at him, "You want to talk about getting another gold tooth?" And so he took Juice and he opened his mouth and he placed his open mouth on the top ring step. So he was teasing a curb stomp. Now, we're not talking about a Seth Rollins curb stomp. We're not talking about that little bullshit curb stomp. We're talking about an American History X curb stomp. We're talking about Tony Soprano and Coco in one of the more famous scenes in Sopranos history. We're talking about that kind of curb stomp. But as he was standing with his boot on the back of Juice's head, the guns were out there. Austin and Colton guns, so they distracted MJF. So he ended up not following through. Robinson took advantage of the distraction. He sent MJF into the ring steps. Back inside, Austin Gunn passed MJF's scarf to Juice, who choked MJF with it while Colton distracted the referee. At that point, Jay White walked out on stage holding the Big Burberry belt, and he took a seat next to the announcers as we went into the picture-in-picture break. So we come back, and while the referee is distracted, MJF uses his scarf to choke out Juice. Well, turnabout is fair play, right? That's only fair. MJF takes a taste of Juice's blood, then he calls for the kangaroo kick, and he hits the kangaroo kick, and the crowd goes crazy. Still can't believe he got that stupid kick over, but he did, right? That's the sign of a good wrestler. When you can take a stupid move and you can get it over like that, the worm, the caterpillar, the people's elbow. Let's be honest, these are stupid, stupid moves that these men were talented enough to get over. So the kangaroo kick is still very popular. Robinson, a little bit later on, he spits in MJF's face. And then he hits him with the left hand of God. Robinson powerbombed MJF. He covered him for an ear fall. MJF fought back. He took out the guns with a suicide dive. Later on, the guns tried to enter the ring, and the referee tried to keep them out. Juice put on his TJ Maxx ring, and he was getting ready to hit MJF with it, but he did not see MJF on the mat slipping the Dynamite Diamond Ring onto his finger at the same time. And MJF, when he got up, he punched Robinson with the ring, ended up hitting the Heat Seeker, and he scored the pin. So MJF picks up the win, and for the fourth straight year, MJF is the winner of the Dynamite Diamond Ring. And I know some people are going to look at this and go, what is the point? If he keeps winning every year, that's the point. It's not meant to be like what Money in the Bank or King of the Ring would be in WWE. It was meant to be a gimmick for MJF. It is part of his persona. It's part of his character. He's probably never going to lose that diamond ring. So every year, you just sort of expect that he's going to keep the ring because it's part of who he is. I really like the intensity here from MJF when you consider the angle they did a few weeks ago, even though they want to whitewash it and pretend it didn't happen. Although there was a very brief reference to it in MJF's promo. When he did sort of, without saying it directly, he did allude to the quarters thing from a few weeks ago. But obviously, all the blowback they got, all the bad publicity they got, they want to pretend it never happened. But he should be angry, and he should be upset with Bullet Club Gold. Not only for the quarters thing, but just, you know, they've been obviously messing with him for weeks, and Jay White stole his belt. So he was appropriately pissed off. And outside of the kangaroo kick, this was not played for comedy or anything like that. I like the intensity that we saw. And this was a very good match. This was a hot way to open the show. Now, the Guns attacked MJF after the match. Jay White joined in the assault. Here comes Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, and they are wheeling Roderick Strong down to the ring, speed walking with him down to the ring in his wheelchair. So Bennett and Taven, they run into the ring themselves to go after the Guns, but they are quickly cleared from the ring. Here come the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. They get into the ring, and they ran off Bullet Club Gold. Jay White was on the stage with a mic, and he tells MJF to forget about all the people who are coming after you. Forget about Samoa Joe, and forget about Wardlow, and forget about all these people. Roddy, he's the only challenger that matters. Focus on him. Robinson said that MJF would never get his hands on the Bang Bang belt again. Colton took the mic. He congratulated MJF on winning his ring back. And I thought, back? He never lost the fucking thing. Winning it back. Then he reminded MJF that he didn't have his belt back. Colton challenged MJF to put his Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles on the line against the Guns at Full Gear. MJF agreed to this. Very stupid thing for him to do, which means he's pulling double duty again like he did it All In. He's going to be wrestling twice on the same show. Why he would agree to this? Well, look, even MJF falls victim to dumb babyface syndrome, which is exactly what happened here. So he agreed to the challenge. He said he would also see Jay White at Full Gear, but he wasn't going to wait that long to get his hands on him. He said that he would pick three partners of his choosing to face Bullet Club Gold in an 8-man tag team match in the main event of next week's Dynamite show. And when his team wins, he says Jay White has to give his belt back to him. So that ended the Bullet Club Gold portion of this segment. But we were not done yet, because then we heard the sounds of Max over and over and over again. Like somebody wanting a subscription to the service. Max, Max, we heard over and over again. It was Roderick Strong at ringside in his wheelchair. MJF stopped him and said, dude, you know, he's in the ring looking down at this fucking guy going, I'm right in front of you. You don't have to keep yelling my name over and over again. And Roddy goes, you're obviously going to pick us, right? Talking about himself and the kingdom. MJF's response to this idea was to tell Roddy to have Taven and Bennett roll him off a cliff, and then he called him a bland bitch, which I assume is a no. In the ring, Max Caster piped in. He got a mic, and he asked if that meant that MJF was going to pick his team, if he was going to pick the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. And MJF says, look, I've known you for a long time, since I was 18 years old. And he goes, I never liked you. Said, I wouldn't tag with you if I was on fire, and teaming with you was the only way to put it out. So the fans booed, and Caster said, so you're saying there's a chance? And they all cheered. And Caster asked MJF to scissor him. MJF teased that he was going to do it, but when he came in, he took Caster's fingers and he closed them. And everybody booed. as MJF left the ring, and he muttered as he was leaving, he was muttering to himself, never. It will never happen, which of course means it will happen, and then the day that it happens, everybody is going to pop huge when he scissors Max Caster. But we were not done yet. The segment rolled on, because as MJF was leaving, we heard Kenny Omega's music. And Omega walks out on stage. He goes face to face with MJF. We got a holy shit chant from the crowd. Omega told MJF that he has something that he wants. And Omega says that he has something MJF wants. Omega said that if MJF is better than him, then he shouldn't be afraid to show it. So his reverse psychology here was very effective, because MJF said, you know what? He's game. And he challenged Kenny Omega. He threw down the gauntlet. And he said that on Collision in Connecticut this Saturday, he will defend the AEW World Championship one-on-one for the first time ever against Kenny Omega. And they shook on it. MJF delivered his catchphrase. Omega did the same. But then he held on to MJF's hand. They pulled him in, and he whispered in his ear, and he said, 3 days, bitch. Then he walked off. So yeah, they packed a lot into this opening segment here. There's a lot to unpack here. Hey, Renots365 just became a sound-off superstar. Hey, Renots, I salute you, my friend. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. So a lot to unpack here. First of all, MJF retains the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Not really a big surprise. I thought there was a chance he might lose it, but not surprising that he would hold on to it. Now we have an ROH tag team title match, handicap match, set up for Full Gear. I would say that Roddy would volunteer and we'd get an MJF Roddy team, but he made pretty clear tonight he wants nothing to do with Roderick Strong. So as things stand, it will be MJF all by himself defending the ROH belts against the Guns. I still think those belts are going to end up around the Kingdom. They're going to go straight from MJF to the Kingdom. But the Guns are going to get the shot at Full Gear. And we are getting a first time ever main event on Saturday on Collision between MJF and Kenny Omega. And as I said at the beginning of the stream, it had to happen on Collision. If the story here is that Kenny Omega wants one chance, he wants one last chance to preserve his streak as the longest reigning champion in the history of this company, AEW World Champion. Obviously, you know, Jade Cargill was TBS champion for 500 plus days. Then he has to beat MJF on Collision, because I think, is it Halloween? I think on Halloween is when he officially passes Omega. So for the people who are going to say, well, why would you blow this match on TV? Why would you waste this match on Collision instead of doing it at a pay-per-view? I will say that they just added a new pay-per-view at the end of the year on December 30th. So yes, if they wanted a big main event on December 30th at the Nassau Coliseum, MJF against Kenny Omega would have been a big one. But that's not the story they're trying to tell. MJF is a marked man. He's got people coming from him at every angle, right? Tonight it was Juice Robinson. At Full Gear, it's going to be Jay White. Samoa Joe wants that title. Wardlow is coming after him. He's got people coming at him left and right. The Omega match is all about this record. So that's why they're doing it on Collision. I don't expect a clean finish. If you're expecting a fluky finish, you're probably right. We're probably going to get some sort of a disqualification or a no contest or a distraction finish. MJF is not losing the world championship on Saturday. We could see the Callis family get involved, and/or Bullet Club Gold at the very least. I would expect them to be involved. So yeah, I'm not going into this expecting that we're going to get a clean finish, nor should you be expecting that. But I'm also not going to sit here and complain about the fact that AEW and Tony Khan are trying to make Collision a must-see show on Saturday. People, yeah, I sometimes, one of the criticisms I hear about AEW is that they don't give enough truly big matches on television as some people would like. Every now and then they'll throw out a dream match or something like that, but some people wish that they would put more, higher caliber matches in terms of their biggest names and their biggest stars on television. Well, this should satisfy those people, because I can't think of a bigger match they could be doing on television than MJF against Kenny Omega. I know I'll be tuned in for that match. I may even have to go live on Saturday. We'll see. But I don't have an issue with it. And I'm glad they're doing it, because if you look ahead, all these people that MJF has beef with now, when would they even do the Omega match? So if they don't do the Omega match now, you want it on a pay-per-view. What pay-per-view would you like it on? He's already got a line of people out the door gunning for him and his championship. So instead of holding off until maybe Double or Nothing next year, or a year from now, maybe they'll get around to doing Omega and MJF, they're doing it now. It's basically two baby faces one-on-one, and they're giving you a big match on free TV. I don't see what there is to complain about. So this was a very newsworthy, very busy, eventful opening segment, but I thought it was a hot way to start the show. Now I mentioned Wardlow. In fact, in the very next segment, we got a Wardlow vignette with footage of him spliced in since they were in Philadelphia tonight. They had footage of him running up the steps at the Philadelphia Museum of Art with the Rocky statue that you could see. He said that he went to a very dark place in the months that he was away from AEW. And he had to sit at home and he had to watch as MJF became the name and the face of the company, despite all of the evil things that he has done and all of the evil things that he has said about Tony Khan, about this company, about the people who work for this company. He hasn't forgotten about that. He also mentioned the fact that I'm watching this guy who I beat last year walking around as the AEW World Heavyweight Champion, main eventing the biggest show, he said, in the history of the business, which, again, that's what they say, at All In. He has to sit home and watch this, and obviously it makes him sick. He said he felt the devil's claw digging deeper in his back. He said there's nothing more than that MJF can take from him. Now he is going to take everything from MJF. This was great, and it was another example of, again, how much of a marked man MJF really is right now. But this is a good way to explain the attitude that Wardlow has had since he's come back, where we just see him walking out. He's expressionless. He doesn't interact with the crowd. He doesn't say anything. He just comes out. He powerbombs people. He goes back through the crowd. He comes off looking, if anything, he's out there looking angry and pissed off. Well, he's got a right to be angry and pissed off. In storyline, he's got a reason to be angry and pissed off. And in reality, he's got a reason to be angry and pissed off. Because if I look back and I see the year that I've had is the year that Wardlow's had, where he was to where he is now, I'd be pretty fucking pissed too. So there's probably a lot of legitimate feelings there. But in storyline, he should be upset. He powerbombed this guy 10 times at Double or Nothing last year. He dominated him. And now this guy is the world champion, and Wardlow gets his ponytail cut off. He's screwed and screwed over and over again. All the shit with QT's crew and all. Think of all the stuff that Wardlow has been through over the past year. And he has to sit at home and watch this guy on television, headlining pay-per-views, and defending the world championship. So I'm glad they acknowledge that, and I'm glad that they are telling that story, because that is the story that makes the most sense. Why he would be so upset, why he would want revenge on MJF. Plus their history, he hasn't forgotten about the way he was treated. He was treated like a servant. He was treated like a bum. He was the Virgil to MJF's Ted DiBiase. He doesn't forget about that. He should be upset. So I thought this was very good. I enjoyed this vignette. We should see more like this. We should hear more from Wardlow. Now we had Rob Van Dam and Hook. We've seen them off and on as a tag team over the past couple of months. They were in Philadelphia. I hear RVD has a little bit of history in that city. Just a little bit. They teamed up tonight to take on John Silver and Alex Reynolds of the Dark Order. Reynolds tried a little trash talking with Hook to start the match, and he was immediately taken down. RVD made the tag, as did John Silver. RVD hit his monkey flip and a double clothesline that sent both members of the Dark Order out to the floor. That took us into the commercial break. Hook was isolated during the break, but he hit an exploder on Silver before RVD tagged back into the match. He dished out a series of kicks, hit a rolling thunder, but Reynolds saved his partner. Aubrey Edwards was just freely allowing Reynolds and Silver here to double team. So great officiating there. RVD, though, fought them off to allow Hook to hit some crossface shots, and the match broke down. Evil Uno jumped in with a chair. RVD caught him with a Van Terminator, or a Van Daminator. Van Terminator is very different. Hit him with a Van Daminator. Five-star frog splash to Alex Reynolds follows as Hook slapped on Red Rum and he forced John Silver to tap out. So, simple, inoffensive. This was fine. The people like seeing RVD. They like singing to Pantera when he comes out. For those who don't know, RVD is not signed to a contract with AEW, but he is brought in on a per-appearance basis. So whenever Tony Khan wants to use RVD, he picks up the phone, he calls him, he comes in, he pays him. Not a bad gig for Rob Van Dam. He's not tied down to a contract. He gets to show up to his old music. He gets a pop. He gets to do a match every now and then. It's not a bad gig. And unlike we've seen other ECW originals that are still out there, we saw Tony Khan many months ago bring in Sabu. And some of these guys really shouldn't be in the ring anymore. Unlike them, RVD can still go. You know, he goes out there, and if you look at him, he looks like the same RVD, and he hits all of his greatest hits. You know, the Rolling Thunder, the Van Daminator, the Five-Star. He can still get some good height on that. So the crowd was happy with it. Now we go to the back. And we see RJ City, and he's sitting backstage introducing us to Toni Storm's latest silent film, which she calls Hold That Butler. I like that because Hold That Ghost is one of my favorite Abbott and Costello movies. Probably my second favorite one, I would say, after Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. I don't know for sure that this was a play off of that, but I heard Hold That Butler, and it made me think of Hold That Ghost. So Toni Storm showed up, and she cut him off, and then she had the truck play the film, and that took us into the picture-in-picture break. They've been doing this the past few weeks where they'll show Toni Storm's silent film, as produced by Toni Khan, see, I was technically right, while they play the commercial side-by-side. And it also, it listed November 18th as Toni Storm's Hollywood homecoming. And her quest for the gold. And she's going to be challenging for the AEW Women's World Championship. So, depending on who won the title or walked out with the title tonight, either Sheeta or Ruby, Tony would be facing them at Full Gear. Now we go from Tony Khan and Toni Storm to Tony Schiavone. There's too many fucking Tonys on this show. Now I know why Vince McMahon wanted to change William Regal's name to William Regal from Steven Regal. Too many Steves. Steve Austin, Steve Regal, Steve Blackman, Steve Williams. Too many Tonys on this show. Tony Nese, right? Where's he at? Where's Tony Nese? Is Tony Nese still there? Too many Tonys. Tony Schiavone was in the ring next to introduce us to Darby Allin and Sting. Right? He does that Sting introduction that he loves to do. Darby came out. He had his right arm in a sling. If you saw Wrestle Dream, you know why. Sting said that he wanted to thank two people in particular that he forgot to thank last week. First, he thanked the Philadelphia crowd. I guess that counts as a person. Because he says, you know, Philadelphia, I've got a lot of history here. He also wanted to thank Darby Allin. He means this with everything in his heart. He could not have come this far without Darby by his side. By far, he said, the best tag team partner that he has ever had. And he also thanked Tony Khan. So those were the two people. Darby Allin and Tony Khan were the two people. I guess Philadelphia was the third man. But he wanted to thank Tony Khan for calling him, for making that fateful phone call to him. I guess it would have been, what, almost three years ago now? To bring him in and give him the chance to grapple a little bit longer. So Tony Schiavone took the mic then away from Sting, and he said that it should be Tony Khan thanking Sting. And he said it was 35 years ago that on this very network, Sting put pro wrestling on the map, on TBS. And he said that we heard about it all week long, that Tony Khan had some sort of special gift that he was going to give to Sting on this show. And he's very proud to bring out that special gift right now. And that gift turned out to be the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Finally, after all these years now, 4 years this company has been in existence, and there was a period of time where Tony Khan was going to bring Ric Flair in, and then that episode of Dark Side of the Ring on the plane ride from hell aired, and that was the end of that. Because I think they wanted to bring Ric Flair in maybe to manage Andrade and do something with him. And at that point, Ric Flair's name was toxic there for a little bit. And Tony Khan opted against it, even though he had been friendly with Flair for a number of years. So now that time has gone by, he decided it would be a good time to bring in Ric Flair. Ric Flair came out to his music that you have heard him coming to the ring to now for a number of years. And the crowd gave him a very respectful ovation. They chanted, "Holy shit," when he got into the ring. Flair hugged Sting. Tony Schiavone said that Flair and Sting on TBS made wrestling what it is and still is today. And he welcomed Ric Flair to AEW, and he put a microphone in the man's hand, which is a dangerous thing to do on live television. I'm sure Flair was at least seven drinks in at this point, so you never know what's going to come out of his mouth. The last time we saw Flair at a live event, it was the Kill Tony podcast. And he stood up and he walked out in the middle of the Kill Tony podcast. So, he wasn't here to kill Tony. Which Tony, though? Which Tony would he kill? Another Tony. I just realized, another fucking Tony. So, he takes the microphone, and Flair says that in life, there are moments that are magical. It's those moments that make you the best. 35 years ago, he and Sting made history on TBS at the first Clash of the Champions, up against WrestleMania. And he said he told Sting this when he inducted him into the Hall of Fame, that going 45 minutes in a match is a hard thing to do. And not only is he one of the greatest wrestlers in the history of the business, but he is probably one of the nicest guys that he has ever known. So when he got the invitation from Tony Khan, he was happy to come ride the wagon with him. He says, "Revolution, what is that, March?" He goes, "Boy, time passes quickly." He goes, he's happy to be here to ride the wagon with him. And he wooed, and he gave Sting a friendly chop to the chest. You know that Flair, at this point, he was feeling it. He was like, "Oh man, one more match. I'm feeling it, man. We're getting the juices flowing here. The blood is pumping, barely, but the blood is pumping, man. You and me, Sting, come on, revolution. God forbid." I could see Flair making the pitch to Tony Khan. "I got an idea for Revolution 2024. Sting and Ric Flair, one more time." That would be something. We got it in the NWA, WCW, we got it in TNA, and now watch Flair try to make it happen here in AEW. No thank you. Christian Cage's music hits. And he comes out on stage with Luchasaurus and Nick Wayne. Christian said that Tony Khan is a billionaire, and this is the gift that he comes up with for Sting. So Sting, he basically gave you a suit, some gold chains, and a black liver. Great gift. He said, "Flair looks great. You can't even see Weekend at Bernie's at all. Can't see the puppet strings." He said he knows there's no God, because if there was, Ric Flair would have been dead 20 years ago. Oh, I love Christian Cage. Christian Cage is awesome. This man is on fire every time he comes out. Every time I hear his music, every time you put a microphone in his hand, Christian Cage can't miss. Carmelo, what is Carmelo Hayes saying, NXT Melo don't miss? Christian Cage doesn't miss. He says, "Now, the real reason I'm out here," before he could continue, the crowd was chanting, "Fuck you, Christian." He says, "The real reason I'm out here is because last week, Sting and Darby decided to stick their noses in my business yet again." And he looked at Darby and he goes, "Darby, how's your arm feeling?" And he held up the TNT title and he said, "Like the Philadelphia Phillies, Darby, look at something that you will never be, a champion." Oof. Philly didn't like that. The Phillies fans didn't like that very much. I laughed. I loved it. I loved it. Suck on that, Philly. And your mascot sucks, too. So Christian said he had a proposition for Sting. He said he wants to make it to Revolution because he started with AEW at Revolution 2021. And so Sting wants to go to Revolution next year and retire. He says he doesn't want to wait until Revolution to see him gone. He wants him gone right now. So he's saying there's three of us. And at Full Gear, Sting and Darby, get yourself a partner. And it won't be a celebration. It'll be more like a funeral. So Christian told the sound guy to hit my music. He didn't hit the music, so he said it again. Sting chimed in on the mic, and then he sneezed, and he apologized, and he said that he's allergic to jackasses. And he told Christian that he and Darby accept his challenge, and they're going to find themselves a partner. See you there. Well, that was a lame gift. I know why Tony Khan wanted Ric Flair there. Tony Khan is a huge Ric Flair mark. He's a huge Sting mark. These are his heroes, right? He grew up with these guys. He's probably sitting in the back marking out. This is the same guy that supposedly, when CM Punk came back at Collision in June, was on headset at the gorilla position going, CM Punk, CM Punk. It's just who he is. So I'm sure for him, he was loving the visual of seeing Ric Flair and Sting back in the ring together. He's probably been dying to bring Flair in and do something with him now for years. And I get it, you know, Sting and Flair have a history, and it was a nice moment. Flair put him over. He didn't, you know, belabor the point. He didn't cut this long-winded promo or anything like that. So it turned out to be fine. But as far as gifts that could have been given to Sting in his retirement, I mean, I think we could have done a little bit better than that. But as far as the partner for the match at Full Gear, let's skip ahead, because there was a backstage segment later in the show where Renee was in the back with Adam Copeland. And she asked Adam Copeland if anything had changed regarding his position about not wanting to fight his friend Christian. And Copeland said, no, not really, because nothing is more important to him than his friendship with Christian Cage. So Darby Allin and Sting show up. And Darby says, look, I know that Copeland came to AEW to ride off into the sunset with his best friend, but that's not the type of world that we're living in. And he said that, I didn't want to break Nick Wayne's face either, but it's kill or be killed. That's just kind of the way that it is. Sting then chimes in. He tells Copeland, he goes, look, I know what it's like to have the blinders on. He said that he went up and down the road with Lex Luger and he had blinders on. He said he learned from the dirtiest player in the game to see through people like Christian. He told Copeland that he needed to open his eyes before it's too late. Then he got all fired up. He even grabbed Edge by the shoulders. He was like shaking him around. And he told Copeland to just listen to what he was saying before it was too late. He told Copeland, we go way back. Don't mess it up now. Really? Way back? They go way back? Because I could have sworn that we had Copeland at WrestleDream standing in the ring when the show was over talking about how this was the first time that he and Sting had even shared a ring together. So we know they didn't do anything on camera or in the ring, so is there some sort of behind-the-scenes personal relationship that I'm unaware of here? That these two have had, that they go back a long way? I don't think they go back that long. But Copeland is the obvious choice, because what else is he going to do at Full Gear, right? He's got no other obvious match. The storyline is with Christian. It's the Undertaker and Kane thing. I will not fight my brother. It's the Bret Owen thing. I will not fight my brother, even though they've already fought many, many times before. I will not fight my best friend. I will not fight my brother. But you can have Copeland come around and accept the spot. We get the six-man tag at Revolution. You know, The funny thing about this, or a Full Gear rather, but the funny thing is, this is the match that I pitched for Revolution when we were talking about what could Sting do in his retirement match. And I said, it's going to be a tag match. Every single match that Sting has had has been a tag team match of some kind in AEW. And I said, if they can hold off long enough, you could do Sting and Darby and Copeland in a trios match against Christian, Luchasaurus, and Nick Wayne. Because, you know, March is still a ways off, but, you know, it's not that far away. You know, if you throw a couple of TNT title challengers in there for Christian between now and then, and you just keep this story going where Edge is like, I will not fight him. You could do that match at Revolution. So instead, we're getting the match in Full Gear. We're getting it a few months early. But it's going to be Copeland. And they could easily, look, they could work around the whole idea of him not wanting to fight his best friend by not having him tag into the match to wrestle Christian. And then there may be a moment where they both get tagged in and Christian, you know, has no problem smacking him around. And, you know, Copeland is just, he just can't do it. You know, he just cannot do it. So you save that interaction for their eventual singles match, which we all know is coming. We all know that's what this is eventually building to. Copeland is the obvious choice. There really is no other obvious choice for that spot. I sure as hell don't want it to be Ric Flair. That's for damn sure. We don't need to see that. But you listen to Flair talk in these interviews, and he even just did an interview with Chris Van Vliet, and you could tell, man, he's like, man, I wish I can get back in the ring. One more match. As far as Revolution now, if they're doing this match at Full Gear, I'm back to square one as far as what Sting's final match is going to be. There's still people saying Sting against Darby. I don't think Darby wants to do that, and I don't think that they want Sting, or Sting doesn't want to be in a singles match. I don't know what the match is going to be. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever find yourself overthinking things? Like your brain is racing with all kinds of thoughts, and you just can't really focus on the task at hand? It could be about a big purchase you're about to make, like a house or a car or something involving a family member. Like, you know what you should do, but you just can't bring yourself to actually do it. Therapy can help you figure out what's holding you back and get your brain working for you, not against you. Therapy has a lot of potential benefits, and it can help you be the best version of you that you want to be. It's not just for people that have been through an emotional trauma in their lives. If you've been thinking about giving it a try, might I suggest BetterHelp? It's online, it's convenient, and it's suited to whatever your schedule may be. You don't need to worry about getting in your car and driving to an office and then sitting in a waiting room. You can do it all from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. You have nothing to lose, but so much to gain. Make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. We got footage from earlier today. Renee did a sit-down interview with Chris Jericho, who was off the show last week. He was licking his wounds and selling his injuries at the hands 2 weeks ago of Powerhouse Hobbs, who basically squashed him in the middle of the ring. And Jericho said he could not ever recall losing the way that he did to Hobbs. He said his ego was probably hurting the most. And Renee asked if he was hitting a certain point in his career where he needed to self-reflect on what he's got left. And Jericho said that he's always had immense self-confidence in himself. He did not see last week coming. Well, I guess that would have been 2 weeks ago. He thought he had Hobbs, but he just couldn't get out of the hole, the spine busters, and he mentioned the world's strongest slams. There does come a time when he questions if he still has what it takes to beat someone like a Will Hobbs. Is it time to step back? Or is it time to get stronger and even more intense? Jericho asked if it was time to get some sort of revenge, and he said, you know, Don Callis has a large family. Jericho said that he has a lot of friends, too. And some of them are even bigger than Will Hobbs. He said maybe it's time to give them a call. Well, I think we all know what that means. I could think of one friend that Jericho has, although he doesn't really have to call. He's probably hanging out backstage somewhere. Old Captain Insano, his former tag team partner, The Big Show, Paul White. He's bigger than Will Hobbs. So I think that that's, not only do I think he's referring to Paul White, he may very well be referring to Mark Henry as well. Now, Mark Henry has said, I think, that he's done in the ring. But Every wrestler says they're done in the ring. And are they ever really done in the ring? No. All it takes is one phone call. Go to the car, get your bag, get your gear. We got something for you. Mark Henry and Paul White. Take your pick. One or both of them. I think Mark Henry, just because of the mentions of the World's Strongest Slam that he took from Powerhouse Hobbs. He specifically mentioned World's Strongest Slam. So I'm thinking it could be him and or Paul White. But we'll see. I guess that will be the Revolution match. Maybe they'll do some sort of a trios match. It would be Jericho and his friends against Hobbs and Sammy and I guess maybe Takeshita. Been a while since we've seen Jericho. Yes, I am aware of the fact that Jericho actually did apply for the trademark to the term Jericho back in, I think it was February. I don't even know that they could call themselves Jericho. For everybody thinking that that has something to do with it, I mean, look, would he even be able to use that name? I guess he would have to successfully get the application approved. I don't know if he got it or not. I know he applied for it. That doesn't mean he got it. But the fact that he applied for it probably is a hint. I actually enjoy Jericho, but I enjoy Jericho. I joined Jericho 15 years ago, right? What was it, 14? 14 years ago. Been a long time since we've seen Jericho. That was back in his Amish Big Show days when he shaved and he looked like he was from the Amish country. We had the Young Bucks and Hangman Adam Page defending their Ring of Honor World Six-Man Tag Team titles against the Hardys and Isaiah Cassidy, or as they call him now, Brother Zay. Cassidy was doing his best to keep things quick. Fact is, the Hardys that you see now are not the Hardys of old. They're just not. They're beaten up. They're broken down. They've taken a lot of abuse over the years. They don't move the way they used to move. So this was rough. The crowd enjoyed it. The live crowd enjoyed seeing them, but I thought the match was kind of rough. Brother Zay found himself double-teamed by the Bucks before Hangman made the tag, as did Matt Hardy. After a little scuffle, both mats slugged it out before Jeff blindsided Matt Jackson with a knee that allowed Hardy to hit a side effect. Cassidy took out Nick and Paige outside. Matt and Zay, they then mocked the Young Bucks pose that took us into the picture-in-picture. Unfortunately for Matt and Zay, they were posing for too long, and that allowed Matt Jackson to hit stereo Northern Light suplexes. Hangman made the tag. He ran wild with a fall-away slam on Zay and a slingshot crossbody on Matt out on the floor. Zay kicked out of a Death Valley driver, and he was about to hit Deadeye, was Hangman, when Jeff made the save, and they did the silly string move that Private Party used to do when Mark Quinn was not injured. Hopefully we'll see Mark Quinn back soon. I did see him recently. Nick fired off a series of super kicks before some miscommunication allowed the Hardys and Zay one last attempt to take control, but ultimately it backfired and the Bucks connected with the BTE on Brother Zay to retain their titles. I could not care any less about the Ring of Honor six-man world tag team titles. I don't care. I don't give a shit. So the fact that they have these six-man belts means absolutely nothing to me. We already have trios titles in AEW. I don't know why we need trios titles in Ring of Honor defended on AEW television, but here we are. But then none of this even matters because it was all about the angle that came after. We got the big home invasion. Prince Nana appeared on the big screen. And he welcomed us to the residence of one Hangman Adam Page. And Page and the Bucks are live in the arena. They're looking up. They see this. And they immediately run to the back. I don't know exactly where they're going. I guess they're going to their phones, maybe. Because I imagine Hangman doesn't live in Philadelphia. So it's not like they're gonna run and stop him from doing whatever he's about to do. You would think they would stay out there and at least watch. Pay attention to what's going on here. But we go live to the house, and we see that they are walking around Hangman's kitchen. Swerve took a child's painting off the refrigerator and said they had no taste. Swerve then sat down on Hangman's couch, and then he heard a noise. And he had Nana hand him the camera, and then he went to go find out where the noise came from, and he went into the child's room, and he walked up to the crib. Now, they never showed what or who was in the crib, right? You leave that up to your imagination. Swerve, though, he leans up against the crib, and he talks about how Hangman owes him a debt, costing him title opportunities. Hangman is messing with Swerve's career. He's messing with these championship matches that Swerve has had, and so now he owes him a debt. And he tossed a Mogul Embassy t-shirt into the crib and said that that's a reminder that the child is in debt to him, and added that it's all his father's fault. And Prince Nana popped his head into the room in a panic to let him know, we got to go. Okay, we got to get out of here. And Swerve then covered up the camera to close out the segment. So now they have made things personal here between these two men. And this feels like it's about to get very violent between these two. Maybe Texas Deathmatch violent at Full Gear. I could see that. But Swerve was, I thought Swerve was great here in this segment. Just, you know, when he was leaning up against the crib and delivering his promo, he sounded completely sinister here. So I thought that that was well done on his part. Hikaru Shida defended her AEW Women's World Championship against the former Outcast member. I say former because I don't think the Outcasts are a thing anymore. Ruby Soho, although the spray paint can shit is still a thing. But the Outcasts, I don't think, are a thing anymore. But it was Ruby Soho. I don't know what happened here. As I said at the beginning of the stream, I've seen these two in the ring before. They were in the ring, in fact, on television just last month. I don't remember them having a bad match. But this just never clicked. It just never got out of first gear. There were a couple of rough moments. The crowd didn't give a shit. You know, and it's like, we've seen Shida on television when she won the title and she's defended the title a few times. The people like Shida, you know, generally. So I don't know exactly what went wrong here, but this was not good. There was an early crossbody as Shida was charging towards the corner. She did a crossbody block from the middle rope that fell a little bit short. She got a little bit of it, enough that Ruby sold it, but she almost missed her. Shida then got 10 corner punches, hit a missile drop kick before Ruby bailed outside. Ruby, though, grabbed Shida off the apron into a no future kick to take control heading into the break. Ruby rolled through a crossbody into a cradle but could not hold on, and she ended up stripping off the middle turnbuckle pad. This would come into play later on in the match. So with Aubrey Edwards distracted, Ruby grabbed a can of spray paint, and then she tossed it to Shida. I want you to pay very close attention here to what she did. She takes this can of spray paint. Referee's attention is diverted. She tosses the can to Shida, and then she acts like she got sprayed in the eyes with the spray paint. Ruby then grabs the AEW women's title, and she charges, but Shida sprayed the belt instead, because Ruby held it up as a shield. So the referee grabs the belt, goes to deposit the belt outside. This distracted Shida for some reason, who turned her back on her opponent, and that gave Ruby a chance to choke her out, I think with her wrist tape or whatever it was, but gave her a chance to choke her out. Ruby hits destination unknown, only gets two. Ruby tried to slam Shida into the exposed buckle. She did hit the no future kick, but Shida fell back into the katana knee for two. Shida avoided no future. She clobbered Ruby with a knee. They traded near falls. Ruby, though, got run into the exposed buckle. She ran into the exposed steel. And then Shida hit another knee strike for the win. After the match, Timeless Toni Storm comes out, and the screen goes black and white. Timeless Toni Storm walks out on stage, posing for the crowd with her new butler, Luther. Dr. Luther. A doctor no more. Now he's a butler. times are tough to go from being a doctor to being a butler, but you know what? You do what you got to do to make a buck, right? So Luther is now her bodyguard. And that is going to be the match at Full Gear, assuming that Sheeta can hold on to her title between now and then, because she's going to be defending her championship again on Collision against the winner of a four-way on Rampage. But the match at Full Gear is going to be Hikaru Shida against Toni Storm for the AEW Women's World title. So I'm watching this match, and Ruby Soho's grand plan to win the AEW Women's World Championship is to do the Eddie Guerrero spot and risk potentially being disqualified by the referee should she be caught. Which would, of course, mean that she does not win the AEW Women's World Championship. Who comes up with this shit? Seriously, who comes up with this shit? Why would you do that spot if you're trying to win the World Championship? So I didn't like this. That was stupid. But this just did not click. This did not work for me. And honestly, it was the low point of the entire show, and it really brought the crowd down. Sometimes you win some, sometimes you lose some. Tonight was a down night. I don't know what else to say. I've seen Ruby, for that matter, but especially Sheeta. We've seen Sheeta have some really good matches on television before. Unfortunately, this was not one of them. And the shenanigans here, which didn't even make any sense, just made it that much worse. Backstage, in the trainer's room, trainer is checking on MJF. When Renee entered the room and the trainer left, Renee tried to ask MJF about his match with Kenny Omega, which is coming up on Collision this upcoming Saturday. And he was promptly interrupted by the Samoan named Joe. He applauded MJF. He said that he only came with the best of intentions. Joe said that MJF suffered from a lack of friends, and he offered to watch his back and be his friend. MJF said, okay, well, that's good with me. And Joe said, on one condition. And that one condition is that MJF give him a rematch for the AEW World Championship. Joe said, you don't have to answer now. But he assumed that he would give his answer soon, given the way things are going for MJF. Again, I like this. I like the fact they're keeping, number one, they're keeping Joe in the world title hunt, which is where he should be. He should be in that picture somewhere. So I like that. But it's like Adam Cole goes down with an injury, and this guy's entire world is falling apart. He's got nobody to watch his back. He's got no other friends in this company. See, he's wrestling Juice, he's wrestling Jay, he's wrestling Kenny, he's going to be wrestling Wardlow. Now he's got Joe breathing down his neck. He's got these stupid tag team belts that he has to defend. This guy's falling apart. It's all crumbling around MJF. How long can he keep this up? Our main event of the evening, Bryan Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli of the Blackpool Combat Club against Orange Cassidy, the international champion, and Kazuchika Okada making his in-ring Dynamite debut. Oh, by the way, let's drop Okada into the show. Sounds good to me. Again, I don't know why. I saw some people complaining. Because they announced, I think they announced it on Collision, right? They just kind of threw it out there. It's Okada on Dynamite. What is there to complain about? Absolutely nothing. They played the man's music. You hear the coin drop. Everybody in the crowd, they know who's coming out. So he got a very good reaction coming down to the ring. And it felt special because, you know, again, this was unexpected. But Okada, and say what you want about, you know, he's been around for a while, and even Okada himself has been talking recently more about retirement, you know, and how much time does he have left. He's talking about this like he's in his mid-40s, but you know, he's still a relatively young guy, but he's been doing this at such a high level for so long. You forget sometimes how young he still is. When you look at the body of work that he's put together and all the championships and all the Tokyo Dome main events and the quality of his matches, you can see why, you know, he's such a special talent. But even in a world where you have Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson and some of these people, Okada is still one of the best in the world to do it. So to get him on this show is a treat. It's special because we don't ever get to see it. Tony Schiavone let everybody know that Tony Khan was in his ear. telling him that they're going to go to the end of the hour and beyond if need be. As long as this match takes, they're going to stick with it. Which they did, by the way. They did go a few minutes past the top of the hour. Although, don't let some of the people in the chat know, because, you know, again, that's a no-no, apparently. You know, when the show goes overtime, you gotta be quick, right? You gotta be quick. Even if you're not done putting everything together here, you gotta be quick, right? They got that hot date, man. That woman. She's not gonna wait at Applebee's all night long. I mean, come on. At some point, she's gonna fucking leave and go home. So, I mean, that's how it is. So, this is also where Excalibur on commentary mentioned that, oh, by the way, we have a new pay-per-view coming up on December 30th. World's End. You know, to look at some of the comments on social media, you would think that that was sort of a great description of AEW. Like, the sky is falling and the company is folding imminently in the next few weeks. I don't know. I feel like some people are watching two different products than what you and I are watching. Some of the idiotic comments I see online about how, you know, dead in 3 months, this company is going down the tubes, it's only a matter of time, they may not last the year. It's always funny to me to read comments like that. So Danielson zoned in on the left arm of Orange Cassidy here to kick off the match. Then he tagged in Claudio, who showed off his power, and he mocked Cassidy with the weak kicks. Cassidy tagged Okada into a big ovation as Okada hit a drop toe hold and an elbow to the back of Claudio before sprinting over to the corner. He was going over to Danielson. Danielson saw him coming, though. He dropped down to the floor. He went, no, not yet, not yet. A forearm and an uppercut exchange between Claudio and Okada followed before a body slam by Okada that led to Cassidy hitting the most nonchalant top rope elbow drop that you've ever seen. Claudio came back. He hung Cassidy up on the top rope. That allowed Danielson to hit a diving knee drop. That took us into the final picture-in-picture of the night. Cassidy used his quickness to send Castagnoli outside. But in trying to make the hot tag, took too long, and Claudio cut him off. Claudio tried to pull Cassidy up by the neck, but it was countered into a DDT. Finally, Danielson and Okada, they made the tag, and everybody in the building gets up. Everybody is applauding. They're waiting for this moment. The first time that we have seen Danielson and Okada in the ring together since June, when Danielson beat this man with a broken arm at Forbidden Door. Get in the ring. We get the holy shit chants from the crowd here in Philadelphia. Philly's always been a great wrestling city. Chops, forearms followed. Okada ducked a series of strike attempts. He hit a charging back elbow and a DDT that spiked Danielson for two. Okada signaled for the top rope elbow, which is the move that broke Danielson's arm. But he rolled through, hit a flapjack. Danielson countered a tombstone attempt. He stomped the arm, and he ended up delivering a series of kicks. Okada ducked the home run shot. Danielson, though, countered a schoolboy into a lapel lock. Okada got a roll-up for a near fall. Both men got up. Danielson missed the Busaiku knee. Okada missed a rainmaker. And we got a stiff back-and-forth with chops and forearm strikes before both men collided in the center of the ring, and we got a double down. So Claudio and Orange Cassidy, they made tags. Cassidy hit a crossbody off the top for two. Claudio powered out of a tilt-a-whirl DDT attempt, and he tried for a big swing, but Cassidy countered into the Stun Dog Millionaire, finally got the tornado DDT for two. Danielson made the save, though, as he and Okada then spilled outside. Cassidy went for the orange punch. Claudio countered into a giant swing in midair, which was very cool. The sharpshooter was applied. Okada broke it up, hit the air raid crash to Claudio across his knee. Okada connected on his top rope elbow drop, and he did the rainmaker pose, and we got the zoom out. And then Orange Cassidy came in. He gave him a hug. We got another zoom out from the producer or the director or whoever controls the zoom out. Danielson broke it up with a double missile drop kick. Okada came back. He got the ripcord applied and was holding him while Cassidy hit an orange punch into a rainmaker. But Claudio made the save. Okada got planted with a springboard uppercut by Claudio, who followed that up with a massive pop-up uppercut to Orange Cassidy. This harkened back to the NXT Black and Gold days when we saw Claudio and Sami Zayn. I know you remember, if you were watching NXT back then, you remember their 2 out of 3 falls match. And the first time that I ever saw him use that spot to finish off an opponent in the match, I think he hit him with it and then hit the neutralizer and won. But I remember the reaction I remember the reaction it got out of me when he propelled Sammy in the air and just boom, he blasted him with that forearm shot. So he did the same thing here to Orange Cassidy, and that was enough to get the 3. I was worried he was going to kick out. I mean, how many times have we seen Orange Cassidy defending this title all year long before he lost it the first time? Kicking out of just everything you can imagine. Kicking out of things to the point of just absolute ridiculousness. That's what we got in the match that he had with Penta. It just got to a point where I was like, all right, this is jump the shark here. This is ridiculous. So he did not kick out, and that's important because now Claudio gets a shot at the international title next week on Dynamite, which only makes sense because he pinned him in this match. This was a hell of a sprint here in these last few minutes and a really, really fun main event, an excellent match here in the main event. Post-match, Danielson is down. He rolled over onto the apron. He rolled out onto the apron, and he's holding his face like he broke his nose or he shattered an orbital socket or something, right? He's selling an injury. And Doc Samson comes over to check on him. Claudio comes over. Here comes John Moxley out of the crowd. Wheeler Yuta. They come out to check on Danielson as well. Best friends now are out there. Trent and Chuck and Chris Statlander and even Hook. Hook's in the ring. He's looking at Wheeler. Yuta's looking back at him, and they're shouting back and forth and talking shit to each other. Meanwhile, Danielson's still laying there. Okada is standing there looking down at Danielson, and he's taunting him. And he's mocking this man. He's holding his face like, oh, you know, like, oh, poor baby. Oh, your face is hurt, right? Like it was very clear that this was an angle because they are teasing Okada Danielson 2. And it's always been my belief, because we didn't get it at Wembley, because Danielson wasn't cleared anyway. But Wembley would have been too fast for it anyway. But it was always been my belief that Tony Khan got the first match, right, at Forbidden Door. New Japan probably wanted the rematch for the Tokyo Dome. And we are very close to Wrestle Kingdom. January 4th is right around the corner. That would be the perfect place to do the rematch with Danielson and Okada, especially because we still have not seen Danielson over in Japan. So if Danielson was going to go to Japan, he's already talked about the G1 next year. It's too much. And it would take him away from AEW and his family for weeks. Danielson in the G1 is probably, at this point, it's just a ship that sailed. Danielson going over to Japan to wrestle a big Tokyo Dome match, I think, is very much in play. And the match to do is him and Okada. So this was just, again, planting seeds and just building to the eventual rematch. No, I don't believe that he's actually hurt. Surprised so many people actually thought it was a legitimate injury. Because that wasn't my read on it at all. But I think the crowd wasn't sure what to make of it. Because they were very quiet. It seemed like maybe they were even a little either concerned or confused by what was going on. The announcers were selling it because he took the orange punch and the Rainmaker, and so that's why he was holding his face. Maybe his face was broken. So again, it kind of came off a little awkward because I think people really bought into it, but I mean, I saw it for what it was. But on the whole, this was a very newsworthy show. And I thought a very enjoyable episode. You know, I turned around, and sometimes it's just at such a breakneck pace, I'm trying to just keep up with my own notes as I'm watching the show. But I looked up at the clock, and I thought it was like 10 to 9. And I look, and it's like 9:26. I said, holy shit, the show's almost over. I got some catching up to do here. Because I had fallen behind. So the show breezed by for me until we hit the women's match, and then it just, you know, slowed to a crawl. But I thought this was an excellent episode of Dynamite. It forwarded some key stories on the show. It set up at least one big match for Collision coming up this weekend. It was a hot open to the show with the MJF stuff. That whole segment, there was a lot going on in that opening segment from start to finish. The Sting segment, yeah, again, Flair is the gift. I don't care. I mean, that to me, that was lame, but I know why they did it, and there's history with Sting and Flair, and if that's the only appearance that Flair makes, you know, or if he comes back when Sting retires and he's there to celebrate with him, I mean, that's fine, but I don't know. As gifts go, I thought that was pretty lame. But the main event was excellent as well, and so now we head into Rampage on Friday night. Rampage on Friday night has Santana and Ortiz. Now, they have been running vignettes for this match, really building the feud between these two. If you don't pay attention to what happens on Rampage, you probably would never know it's even happening. But because I have an interest in seeing what these two are going to do together, I've been making sure I catch up at least with their stuff. So it's a shame it doesn't have a bigger audience. Obviously, Rampage has the smallest audience of all the AEW shows. You know, it's Dynamite, then Collision, then Rampage. So I wish they had a bigger stage for it, but they're doing that match on Rampage on Friday. I know I'll tune in, at least for that match. So if you want to see that match, you got to watch Rampage, because that's where it's going to be taking place. Also, Sky Blue, Willow Nightingale, Anna Jay, and Abaddon in a four-way. The winner of that four-way match will then get a women's world title match on Collision against Hikaru Shida. Speaking of Collision, we have the women's title on the line. And we have the big main event of MJF defending against Kenny Omega. That is going to be a very big main event. Dynamite next week, Orange Cassidy defends the international title against Claudio. And MJF will have that tag match against Bullet Club Gold. We'll see who he picks as his partners. I'm thinking Samoa Joe has to be one of them. Now, if you had Joe on the show tonight volunteering to be his friend, so Joe probably will be one. He shot down the Acclaimed, and he shot down Roddy in the Kingdom. So is it going to be a situation where the way things end up with Omega on Saturday, it ends with a handshake maybe when all is said and done between them, and maybe Omega agrees to be a partner of his on Wednesday? Maybe it's Omega and Joe and MJF. Then I guess there would have to be one other person. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm thinking Joe will be one of his partners. Well, let's take a look at the poll here and see what you guys thought of the show tonight. Almost 75% have given the show a thumbs up. 25% of you have given Dynamite a thumbs down. That is a win for Dynamite this week. Pretty sure that's a lot better than what they did last week in the poll. But again, you can go vote at Solomonster on Twitter if you would like to chime in. Let me know what you thought. I enjoyed the show tonight. I enjoyed Dynamite. But again, you know, to go back to what I said at the beginning, to watch NXT Halloween Havoc last night and all those women's matches, including the main event, which was very good, between Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyria, and then to watch this match, the one women's match they had on the show tonight. This was not the week for those two to go out and have the kind of match that they had, because if you compare the two, you know, back-to-back nights like this, you look at that women's division in NXT, and I gotta say, you know, look, I don't keep up with Impact the way that I used to. I know they have a lot of very talented women, and the Knockouts division has always been one of their strong points. I assume that hasn't changed. Now they have, you know, Mickey James and Deonna Purrazzo, and they have Trinity and Jordan Grace. And so they have a strong women's division. And we know that AEW has a lot of very talented women as well. But you look at that NXT women's division, and I would put the NXT women's division up against any division in any promotion in this country or anywhere in North America, including AEW. AEW is, you know, down here. NXT right now is up there as far as what Shawn Michaels is doing with that women's division. He is doing a very noticeably good job, because some of those women haven't really been doing this for very long, and you see the progress they've made in a short period of time. And again, whether it's a Tiffany Stratton or, you know, even some of the women that they have in this breakout tournament, you know, Kalani Jordan, I mean, some of them are impressive, and you can see they're still very green, but the potential is there. And then look at the way the show ended last night, you know, with Becky putting over Lyra Valkyria clean in the middle of the ring, and Jade Cargill is up there sitting on a big throne. What's she gonna do? Shawn Michaels is, let me tell you, man, he's putting the pieces together with what he has been given in that women's division right now in NXT. So maybe Tony Khan can learn something. I don't know. But let's take a look at your super chats here. See what you guys thought of the show tonight. I do appreciate the support, as always. Groovy Goose, our boy Groovy. Always love to hear from Groovy Goose, says, bro, with TNA back, will we see Russo return, bro? No. No, bro. No Russo. I'd like to think that Scott D'Amore is not that stupid. Scott D'Amore seems like a pretty smart guy, pretty savvy guy. I would like to think he's not that dumb. Bobbert Reviews. In a couple of hours, it will be my birthday. Can I get a birthday shout-out? I don't know, should I? What do you guys think? Should I give him a birthday shout-out? Nah. Bobbert, happy birthday, Bobbert. I hope you have a fantastic birthday. I hope you had a better day than I had. Paul Carpenter with the $5. Been waiting for Sting and Edge face-to-face for a long time, and it was great. Rest in peace to Vic of the... What? The active shooter that just happened in the Maine? In Maine? I don't know what that means. But yeah, I agree. Sting and Copeland, it's cool to see them interacting together on TV. I don't think they're going to be wrestling each other at any point, but... Noel Mulligan with the $10 super chat. Hi, Solomonster. Who was the craziest wrestler you ever met? For me, it was the Sandman. He was way past drunk. When I met him in Killarney, he was with Chris Masters, Gangrel, and Eugene. Oh my god, the craziest wrestler that I ever met. I've met a lot of wrestlers over the years. I don't remember them being particularly crazy, at least not when they were around me. Craziest wrestler that I ever met. I never met the Sandman. I never met any of those old ECW guys outside of RVD I met briefly. I would call him crazy, though. I don't know. I don't think I've ever met any of the crazier wrestlers that are out there. I mean, I met Sid many years ago, but he was pretty... He was pretty well-behaved. He was on his best behavior. Asked me if I wanted to pitch in and play a softball game with him. I said I was busy. Maybe next time. Jacob Donnelly with the $15. Tony Khan celebrating the return of TNA by putting Christian, Sting, and Ric Flair all in the same segment. Hey, you know what? The only thing that was missing was Jay Lethal coming out to do a woo-off with Ric Flair. And you know Lethal was back there. So the only thing missing was Black Machismo from that segment. Nick Grosso with a 1999. Just throw this out there, and it's probably far-fetched, but what if the devil is Sammy Callahan? He has history with MJF, and he prides himself on being the real villain of wrestling. There's no bigger villain than the devil. Here's the thing about the devil mask person. It could literally be anybody, because... Whoever is in the mask itself right now is completely irrelevant, right? If I was an intern or I was a production assistant working backstage in AEW, they could put the mask on me and put me on TV. So I don't know if Tony Khan has a firm person in mind or if he's still contemplating who he wants it to be. I'm not sure how hastily the storyline was put together in light of Adam Cole's injury. Would we be getting the devil in the mask if it were not for Adam Cole getting hurt? Would we even be getting this storyline? I don't know. Sammy Callahan is a possibility because we know he was backstage at Collision last weekend. He was there. He's, you know, possibly being, considered for a spot on the roster, maybe a spot behind the scenes. John Moxley's been pitching for him. He's good friends with him as well. If they were to bring Callahan in, and the person in the devil mask is on the shorter side, it's not like a big, tall person. Sure, you know, if they wanted it to be Sammy Callahan, it'd be very easy to just put him under the mask. But I don't know who it's going to end up being. I was figuring Roddy. I still kind of think it may end up being Roddy, but I don't know. You know, obviously tonight we saw Roddy get wheeled away by MJF backstage in that opening segment, and then they, you know, a minute later cut to the devil in the mask. So maybe it's not him. I don't know, but it's a good story because it keeps people thinking. And they're going to be wondering, okay, who is it? Who's going to be the big reveal? It's like, who ran down Stone Cold? You know, when they do these mystery angles, it's a good hook. I just hope that they have a good payoff for it. Because we've had angles like this that have had terrible payoffs before. Fayola drums with the $5. Tonight was my first AEW show. Also, my first super chat on this channel. Well, welcome, Fayola Drums. I am very happy to have you. Both Dynamite and Rampage were great. Looking forward to Crown Jewel. Hashtag, yeah. I'm looking forward to it as well. I like these pay-per-views that are in the middle of the day. I think it actually makes my life a lot easier. So, we'll have Crown Jewel coming up in a couple of weeks. Hopefully, we'll have you back for that as well. I am Batman. Yes, I am. With $5. Was at Dynamite tonight. The main event was really good. The crowd loved Brian and Okada. Hashtag Solomonster. Hashtag Halloween PS. Keep up the phenomenal work. I'm going to try. How close are we to 400, by the way? Are we at 400 yet? Come on, we got to get to 400, man. You're letting me down here. What are we? We're 11 away? We should be there already. Arabian Night 2000, what do you think Will Ospreay... Who do you think Will Ospreay signs with in 2024? I think AEW is the best spot for him in his style. There's more top talent, plus he can still work New Japan. I, up to now, was thinking he would stay with New Japan. And if he did not stay with New Japan, if he was more open to maybe moving to the United States, which he was not before, now he is. That changes things. There's a lot of people he could work with in WWE. He's obviously interacted with Seth Rollins before. And there's many other people he could work with there as well. I think he either stays with New Japan and then keeps splitting his time between New Japan and AEW, or he signs with AEW and he can still do New Japan. And I think that would work out well for him. But now that he has picked up Barry Bloom as his agent, kind of the agent of the... Barry Bloom is like the Scott Boris of wrestling agents, to use a baseball analogy. So he's looking for a payday. You know, he wants to make money. Nothing wrong with that. WWE, they can afford to pay him, but so can Tony Khan. So I hope whatever deal he gets the best possible deal he can. Because right now, pound for pound, bell to bell, in the ring, the best wrestler in the world is Will Ospreay. And the best wrestler in the world should command best wrestler in the world money. So hopefully he'll get that bag, because he deserves it. HBKC83, who would you like to face Sting? Hey, Jay Navy, thank you for the sub. I think that a Sting-Darby Allin match against Edge and Christian, if he was either a heel or if Christian and Copeland, if Christian was a babyface, I don't want to see Christian as a babyface yet, but if the alignment was a little bit different, I like the marquee value of doing Edge and Christian against Sting and Darby, and maybe we'll get it. You know, Revolution's still many months away. It's not looking good, but it's going to be Sting in a tag match. That's the match I would like to see. Samoan fan, RVD's appearance at WrestleMania 40 got pulled. I wonder why. So what RVD said, he did, I don't know if it was on his podcast or, you know, he did an interview. He mentioned the fact that he was supposed to do something for WrestleMania next year and it got pulled. And I think he said it was immediately after that he got a phone call from AEW and the opportunity came up for him to do something with AEW. So that made it sound to me like one didn't have anything to do with the other. It didn't sound like, oh, you know, he started working for AEW, and so WWE maliciously decided to pull him. If the timeline is correct, it could have just been happenstance. And I don't know what they would have had him plan to do, just because they're in Philadelphia. So there may be some ECW influence at WrestleMania next year. It could be a very ECW-centric Hall of Fame induction. I mean, I don't know. So I don't know if they had him planned for something other than a match, or they had him planned for a match, but according to RVD, he got pulled from whatever their plans were. And with him making regular appearances now for AEW, I'm sure that would have been, it probably would have been dropped no matter what. So, but that's according to RVD anyway. Samoan fan says, Solo has left plenty of women at Applebee's. Two women at Applebee's. Silver Tower, thank you for that 46. Samoan fan. Actually, you know what? Silver Tower, it's been a while. And I got to give Silver Tower the special treatment here.
Too sweet to be sour. It's Silver Tower.
Silver Tower right there, man. That's for you, brother. Samoan fan, didn't you meet the Ultimate Warrior? Wasn't he... of course. Thank you. Thank you. How could I forget? You're right. You're right. How could I forget that? You know what I was... I'll tell you what. I'll tell you why it didn't register with my brain. When I met the Warrior, and some of you know this story, some of you don't. When I met the Warrior, it was not a wrestling appearance. I met the Warrior, I was still in college. And the Warrior was brought in by one of the... I don't know who he was brought in by. I think he was brought in by the... I don't know, the Young Republicans maybe or something. I didn't give a shit about any of that. I just heard the Ultimate Warrior was coming. I said, I gotta see this, right? This was 2000... What year was this? 2004, maybe? I think I was a senior. Anyway, I go to this event, and the Warrior is in a suit and tie. Obviously, he's not wearing any makeup, because that would be fucking weird. And he's got the shoulder length, long, like, it's gray at this point, kind of black and gray hair. And he's talking about philosophy, and he's talking about the great books of the Western world, and he asked the audience a question: how many of you have read the great books of the Western world? And nobody raised their hand. And so he flipped out, and he started going off about how, you know, the students today, kids today, they don't read the great books of the Western world. And I'm like, dude, if I had popcorn, I'd be sitting there, man. I'd be having the time of my life. So anyway, he talks about whatever he talks about. We get to the end of the event, and you can go up to meet him and take pictures. And then they're also setting up a microphone in each aisle. And so students can come up to the mic and they can ask questions to the Warrior. So I did go up at the very end. I'm skipping ahead, but I did go up to him at the very end, and I shook his hand, and I got a picture with him, and he had a big cheesy smile on his face. He looked like he was trying to sell me a used car. I've posted the picture online before of me and the Warrior. But the best part of the event, and so to go back to the other super chat, this was actually just, he went fucking crazy here. Some of the questions that some of the students were asking him were really getting under his skin. Now, if you've ever seen the famous or infamous YouTube video of the Ultimate Warrior at UConn, this was not quite at that level of crazy. It didn't get quite that crazy, but it was kind of like that. One guy asked him about him doing steroids. He threatened to take the guy and put him through a table, and he wasn't trying to be funny. It was pretty crazy. It was one of those things where I was looking around to like see other people's reactions, especially people who maybe didn't know that this guy used to be a wrestler. And it was a little tense in the room that day. But he was nice to me when I went up there to meet him. Like I said, big smile on his face. Maybe I'll post the picture again if people want to see it. But yes, that would qualify as the craziest wrestler that I have ever met. Warrior was out of his fucking mind. He was out of his mind, and he was not a very nice person. To me, he was nice. To other people, not so much. I'll never forget The Undertaker telling the story of the kid that he just completely went off on, to the point where The Undertaker had to go to him and go like, dude, you can't act like that towards little kids. And I don't remember if that was the kid that Vince McMahon made him record that video apology for, if you remember his A&E biography. They actually had the video in there. Hey, Jay Soder, 21. Thank you for the sub. Yeah, there was a kid that he had to record an apology video to him, and they were like retake after retake, and you can hear Vince in the background, and he's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to do. And Vince is like, it's a work. We're working here. We're just working. Because the kid's father was some big wig from one of their sponsors, and so Warrior was not a good person. He was not a good person. Sean D, is WWE close to done with this Saudi deal? No. It was a 10-year deal. And their first Saudi show was in April of 2018. So they're halfway through. I think they have another 5 years left to go. Joseph Brooks, cherish, keep, borrow, and sell on your favorite wrestling things. Bret Hart, favorite wrestler. 1992 Royal Rumble, favorite match. Demolition, favorite tag team. And King of the Ring 93, favorite pay-per-view. Okay, so this is kind of an odd question, but I'll take a stab at it here. Cherish Bret, because you know, he's one of the goats. I'm going to keep the 92 Rumble. I'm going to borrow the 93 King of the Ring, and I'm sorry, I got to sell Axe and Smash. I'm sorry, guys. I still say it is a sin that, unfortunately, they will probably be dead before they are inducted into the Hall of Fame. But then again, Vince McMahon is no longer in real control of those types of decisions, so if Triple H is a real student of the game, I would like to see Triple H induct Demolition into the Hall of Fame next year. So that is what I would like to see Triple H do. He now has the power. Him and Nick Khan and them, they have the power to make that decision. ABK, again, man. Holy shit. He says, need to see the new Super Chat. Well, you saw it twice. Hopefully we'll see more of it in the future. But, man, wow. ABK, thank you, brother. Again, I hope you're doing well. Very, very kind of you. Yeah, Nick. Okay, so that's what it was. Bret Hart said that he saw the Warrior blow off a Make-A-Wish kid once at an airport or something. I mean, just that alone, if you're cranky and people are annoying you and coming up to you, but you just hear story after story, like even Undertaker is like, this kid didn't really do anything wrong to him. It's not even to say like, oh no, leave me alone. Like, he's like really saying some horrible shit. And I'm like, to a kid, like, what's wrong with you? You know? There does come a point where you understand that you are in the spotlight. You are a celebrity. You are looked up to like a comic book hero come to life. Little kid comes up to you in the airport or something. If you don't want to sign an autograph, all right, but there are ways to let the kid down without apparently healing on him and going off on him like that. So there's tons of stories like that. It's just who he was. It's the kind of person he was. Lakers Pats, Flair against Sting, Revolution, the final chapter. No, Lakers Pats, come on, man. Don't plant that seed. What are you giving him ideas for? Did you see Flair's last match last year? I'm surprised how he didn't die during that match. I'll never know. He literally passed out during the match. He has no memory of it. Don't give them ideas. Boney, better match. Money in the Bank or King of the Ring? King of the Ring is not a match, though. It's a gimmick. The better match type is Money in the Bank. King of the Ring is just a regular tournament with a crown. Arabian Knight, who has the better men's and women's division, WWE or AEW? Would you say AEW has the deeper men's division and WWE has the better women's division? Well, again, you say better women's division. Are you talking about better caliber of talent? Are you talking about better usage of the women? Because WWE wins in a landslide. Whether you're a fan of the women's divisions or women's wrestling in general or not, you can't deny the fact that WWE, as far as exposure, and WWE is also guilty of, you know, booking malpractice when it comes to the women on the main roster in a lot of cases, but as far as exposure that they give to the women and the number of women's matches and NXT alone, WWE wins easily. As far as the men, as far as who has the deeper bench, I would go AEW. Not to say that WWE doesn't have a lot of talented male talents on their roster, but AEW almost has too many of them to the point where they don't know how to properly utilize all of them. But I think it's fair to say that they have a deeper division. Devin from NJ, will Salamancer ever hug Charles Mason like Tony Khan? Fuck Charles Mason. His day is coming. Mark my words. And Nord, advice on heartbreak. Cannot move on. Well, you must. My advice to you, I could give you some lame advice and say, there's more fish in the sea, right? That's, you could hear that from anybody. My advice to you is this. I don't know your situation. I don't know what led to this particular heartbreak. I don't know the circumstances around it. It doesn't matter. But obviously your heart has been broken. My advice to you is this. Sitting and dwelling on it will do you no good. All it will do is it will drive you deeper and deeper and deeper into the hole, into Naya's hole. Okay? And you don't want to be there. So it's easy for me to sit here and say, get over it. I'd be lying if I told you that you're going to be able to get over it just like that. That's not how it works. It takes time. You got to work through it. It sucks. It's painful, but you will get over it. And guess what? You will find somebody much better. You will find somebody much better. You will look back on this one day and say, boy, did I dodge a bullet, right? That next girl you find, you're going to take her to Applebee's and you're going to live happily ever after. I believe that. I believe that. But seriously, it's hard, but everybody goes through it. You're going to be just fine. You're going to be just fine. So Nord, hang in there, brother. Will Chisholm. Hey, Will, thank you for the $20. There's creepy Jeff Hardy. Pretty creepy. I think Toni Storm is great, so if she is going for Sheeta's title, but she has to win, right? The bad thing is Sheeta is going to lose a title less than a month again. It's feeling like how WWE books Asuka. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Toni is winning the belt. If it were me, I like Toni Storm. I like this new character. If it were me, I would be very tempted to put the belt back on her. But I'll tell you what. Jamie Hayter is probably not that far off from coming back. And I personally would really like to see Sheeta and Hayter go at it again for the championship. Not to say you can't do Toni Storm and Jamie Hayter. They had a hell of a match, too, the last time we saw them in the ring together. I would kind of like to see Sheeta hold on long enough if let's say, Hayter's going to be back around Revolution time, which she might be. And then we get Hayter and Sheeta maybe at Revolution, and she loses it there. And Hayter gets the belt back. Toni Storm is going to be okay even if she doesn't win the belt because she has this new gimmick, right? So she has something going on. So it's tough. I agree with you. It would be terrible to take the belt right off Sheeta again after they just did that. But I'm digging Toni Storm, so I don't know. Honestly, either way is fine with me. And this was BetterHelp featuring the Love Salamonster. I do what I can. I'm here to help. But you know, everything I said there was correct, right? This too shall pass. Everybody goes through it at some point, some sort of heartbreak. whether it's a relationship, whether, you know, it's the passing of someone close to you. And it sucks. And you can say all the things you want to try to make the person feel better, and you can, all the platitudes, everything that you can do. Sometimes the best thing to do is to just leave the person alone and let them grieve and let them work through it. Let them know you're here for them. Let them know, hey, brother, you want to pick up the phone? You want to go do something? Anytime. You just let me know. But everybody's got to work through these things on their own. And as time passes, with the passage of time, things do improve. They do get better. So Nord is going to be just fine, man. Nord's a trooper. He's only got the second best VPN. But Nord is a trooper. I'm an ExpressVPN guy myself. The goal tonight was 400 likes, and we're well past that. So we blew past that. I thank you for that. The likes do help a lot, as do, by the way, the Spotify comments. I want to thank everybody who's been leaving comments on Spotify, because they recently enabled comments for each episode. So if you listen to the full audio podcast, pop over onto Spotify. You know, pop on a 5-star rating, leave some feedback. It's always very helpful to the show. So I want to thank everybody who did that this week. But let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Proto Man says, I got Nord. Well, you got the wrong one, my friend. You got to start using ExpressVPN. You got to take a look at the description down below. I'll get you a good deal. Give him a chance. I think you'll like him. All right, here we go. Be the booker time. You guys earned it. Let's get into it here. Stinger looks happy. You know, now I think there's going to be a clamoring for a full sound-off episode of nothing but just relationship advice and relationship stories. Maybe we start taking phone calls again. Would people dig that, by the way? Would people actually tune in for that? Because we could expand our horizons here on the channel. We could expand the content, and that would be very interesting. All right, here we go. Be the booker. We begin with Ministry Undertaker from the Ministry of Darkness, the worst version of the Undertaker. Is that a hot take? Would that be considered a hot take? I don't think it's a hot take. Ministry Undertaker. Going to go one-on-one with JBL, John Bradshaw Layfield. I don't like Ministry Undertaker. Ministry Undertaker and JBL does nothing for me. Nothing. There you go. That'll piss some people off, but I don't care. So here we go. Women's Be the Booker. We have Willow. Oh, wait, that's not Willow. That's Sensational Sherry. I could have sworn that was Willow. Tell me that doesn't look like Willow. Sensational Sherry. Love Sherry. As great as she was, I still think she's underrated. Sherry is going to go one-on-one with, well, would you look at that? Medusa. Alundra Blaze. And Sherry. Now that's old school right there. That's a great match. They'll show these ladies how it's done. Sherry and Medusa. Which I'm pretty sure we got in WCW, didn't we? I vaguely remember them having at least one match on Nitro. And now tag team Be the Booker. Wrap this up here with a nice big bow, and we begin with Pretty Deadly, the former NXT Tag Team Champions, all healed up. Very happy to see him back in action here. Elton Prince, all recovered from his physical ailments. Pretty Deadly, going to be taking on Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley. The Blackpool Combat Club against Pretty Deadly. It gets the bell from me. Two out of three ain't bad. Leave it to Undertaker and JBL to screw the whole thing up. Should have been 3 for 3. Are people bitter about that? Are people bitter about that? Ministry Undertaker against JBL? Why? People actually want to see that match? All right, we got SmackDown coming up on Friday night. We got the contract signing. Roman Reigns and LA Knight are going to sign the contract for their match in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewel. So that is coming up on Friday night. I will be here with you live on Friday. I will let you know I'm going to have to consider possibly going live now on Saturday night for this big MJF Kenny Omega match. We'll see. We'll see. Of course, we have the podcast on Sunday, so either way, I've got you covered. If you did not download episode 831 of The Sound Off, some good shit on there. So make sure you go ahead and check out the latest episode. There were a bunch of mailbag questions. So those of you who have emailed me recently, your question may have been answered on the show. So be sure you go back and check that out. Like I said, leave some feedback for me on Spotify. It is very helpful. Please hit that like button on your way out. Subscribe. We picked up some new subs tonight. I hope you guys will stick around and enjoy your stay. Be well. Stay safe. We will come back and do this all over again for the SmackDown stream live. See you on Friday.